This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
Welcome to another spoiler room here on May the 4th, or as many out there say, May the 4th be with you. And tonight, we are going to talk about Star Wars. Instead, we're going to talk about musicals. Why? Because, yes, I'm not afraid to admit it, I do enjoy musicals. And tonight, I've got a great crew here who are going to discuss, we're going to cuss and discuss about musicals and about our favorite musicals. And let's go right down the row. First off, she is back in the room with us tonight, Dawn. Hello, Dawn. How are you today?
Just fine. Hello, gentlemen.
Glad to have you in the room with us. And next to her, you recognize that voice for sure. It's the BFD, Glenn Bittner. Hello, Glenn. How are you?
Hi, Mark.
And next to Glenn is the lovely Andrew Shearer, has once again joined us tonight. How are you, Mr. Shearer?
I am fine. Thanks for asking. It is wonderful to be here. Hi, Don. Hi, Glenn. Hi, Scott. Hi, Mark.
We got one musical intro. Fantastic. And next to him, the one, the only, Bust the Dope Rhyme, Mr. Scotty D.
Oh, don't make me rap.
It's not that kind of
freestyle.
Musical.
I can't freestyle. I mean, and then,
how are you tonight?
Hello.
How are you tonight, sir?
Anything I do is going to start out with, my name's Scotty D and I'm here to say, so it's not going to turn out any good. Okay?
A lot of different words, man. You could be like, my name is Scott. If you fuck with me, you'll get shot because I'm too hot. Tell me what you got.
There is an episode of the Film Geek Central podcast where I did actually rap a review.
Wow. I'm definitely going to have to look that up. And
yeah,
folks,
I rapped on a bet for $20, I wrapped the my review for the 1985 film Rappin'.
Nice.
Well, and it wasn't bad, but it's about the only halfway decent rap I was capable of.
Well, tonight we won't be rapping in that sense, but we will be rapping, if you will, talking about some musicals here. Musicals kind of made a resurgence in this new century, in the 2000s, but they've tapered off a bit again. But I wanted to get this crew together and just talk about musicals in general. I think they kind of get a bad rap sometimes, and so I just want to get people's initials feelings with the musical. First, we'll start off with Mr. Andrew Shearer tonight. Sir, how do you feel in general about musicals? Do you think we still need more of them out there? Do you think they get kind of a bad rap?
Oh, man. I think people in general are just so used to the way regular movies go that when people start singing, it just seems weird. Mm-hmm. And they're not wrong, you know? Like, it is weird. Some of my favorite movies ever of all time are musicals, man. Like, Rocky Horror changed my life. I watched that, like, well, my daughter's into it, so I saw it 3 times in 1 day very recently. I've done Hedwig songs on stage. I always close the karaoke night with the wig in a box on demand from the burlesque troupe that I do wig in a box. So I don't know, dude. I don't know what people's problem is. Like, I think it really is just because it's very different, but if you watch a lot of musicals, you're like, what's the big deal, man?
What's the big deal, man? What is a big deal? Who fucking cares, Mark?
I don't give a fuck. He doesn't give a fuck.
No, he doesn't give a fuck. I love this.
This is a classy show.
This is a classy show. Well, we've had musicals. I believe, I don't know how many in the room have seen Poultrygeist.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
But, Dawn, not many musicals out there singing about getting your salad tossed, are there?
Not really.
How do you feel about musicals in general? Do you think they get a bad rap? Do you enjoy them?
I think kind of. I think, and as much as I've, with my kids growing up in the heyday of Disney cartoon musicals, And honestly, myself, I think that a lot of people think when you ask them, well, what's their favorite musical? Beauty and the Beast, Disney's Beauty and the Beast, it's the best! and they don't really, it doesn't really register that there are so many more musicals out there.
Yeah, and musicals always seem to take a bit of chance, too, and I don't think people realized, back in the way back, musicals actually had pop songs, if you will, or could considered pop songs in them, songs that would play on the radio at the time, or, you know, different versions of songs that were on the radio earlier. And, yeah, there's a lot more out there than just the Disney animated musicals. Glenn, how about you and your feelings on musicals?
I love musicals. And it is definitely something that some people just, I think it's most people who have just never seen them, who have preconceived notions about them. I remember one time I tweeted that I picked up I got vinyl of My Fair Lady. And a friend of mine who is actually, now I would expect this from some, you know, possible muscle-headed moron jock boy who just, you know, has to put on a facade. But this was from a very liberal friend of mine who said, well, let me know when you get your penis back.
Whoa.
Dude.
Wow.
Dude.
Not cool.
You know, and if Audrey Hepburn is the one who has my penis, fine, she can keep it.
It sounds like your friend wanted it.
Yeah, possibly. So, and I've had people who have commented like that, but then I've also had people that just for some reason I wouldn't expect to be in the musicals. Mm-hmm. When I talked about the fact that I watched Sound of Music, and they actually reply by typing out some of the lyrics from one of their favorite songs, and I'm like, dude, I was not expecting that from you, because all you watch are movies like Armageddon, and every other thing in your life is death metal. And Carlson's like, dude, Sound of Music, fuck yeah! Go, a two, a three,
a two. That was good. I wasn't expecting that. You got a good singing voice there, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, no. Scott should be a one-man death metal band.
Dude, that was good.
And speaking of Scott, how about you, sir, with musicals? Do you enjoy them? Have you gotten bad juju from people for liking them?
Man, I love musicals. And, I mean, I'm the type of I'm glad Dawn mentioned the Disney movies, you know, and what's like, raising your kids and stuff with the Disney and everything like that. Because I think that for a lot of people, you know, musicals used to be a mainstay of films. And when musicals kind of started to die out, one of the only things that you could see musicals in, as a musical in American film, were animated films. And it seemed like every single animated film had to be a musical. I think that that may have kind of skewed a lot of the recent generations against them. And, you know, we've recently found out that, no, not every animated film needs to be a musical, just as like the Bollywood film industry recently said, you know, not everything has to be a musical here. But I think that I love any way you can tell a story. Anything you can do to tell a story. Is it going to be an epic poem? Is it going to be a narrative? Is it going to be an opera? I'm totally cool with opera. And I love film musicals. I think that it's such a vibrant way to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And there are certain stories that play much better as musicals. And honestly, I think there's a lot of stories that could only play as musicals. And I'm a big fan from the old style musicals all the way to more recent and modern musicals and everything.
Yeah, I was really happy to see when that resurgence of musicals came back in the early 2000s there for a while. And for me, I found it funny, especially after watching a couple musicals in preparation for the show. And pardon me, Dawn, I may get a little mail here, but...
are you sure, Mark?
Yeah, well, it's been joked about quite a bit, and Glenn even touched on it, not literally, but could have, you know, how
men, can't see me.
Certain guys... there's a certain type of guy that is supposedly associated with the musical or was always in jokes about, oh, he likes musicals. Well, then you know which way, you know. And I'm like sitting here going, have you guys ever watched musicals? I'm like, Frank Sinatra and Gene Kelly got more tail than anybody.
including from
You're
dudes.
You're not wrong.
Andrew, what were you going to say?
Oh, including from dudes.
Yeah, including from, I mean, you know, they sit there and they pick on you, but I'm like, you do realize that mostly the guys that are in this really, yeah, they were big romancers and such, and like, and they got the women, you know. Go ahead.
They were also as part of the, you know, part of the thing to be in a musical, you know, it used to be considered the triple threat, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can sing, dance, and act. Well, so part of that, a lot of the actors, and honestly, I would actually extend it to some of the actresses, were some of the more charismatic and kind of the stars that you might stay at home and look at their picture in the magazine and just go, ah, you know, I imagine there's quite a few people that were looking at, you know, Gene Kelly's picture and saying, ah, just like there were probably people who were looking at, you know, Sid Charisse's picture and saying, ah, you know, it's just, you know, because if you had that triple threat, I mean, if you had the whole package, I mean, it was, musicals kind of elevated things above reality into such an extent that the stars themselves kind of embodied a certain fantasy element.
Well, the thing I always love, I love music in general. I mean, you look at my soundtrack collection, I love music. I love the emotions. So when you get that triple threat, when you get someone who can act along with a decent, you know, singer and then dance, the skills that they show, that's attractive qualities right there. You know, I mean, that's why some of these stars got as big as they did, you know, and are still considered some of the best actors and actresses out there today. And speaking of best actors and actresses, I think we'll get into then today a little bit of talk about some of our favorite musicals. And I want to start first with Mr. Andrew Shearer. I wanted to start with him because the one that he's bringing today is one that is, in fact, all of these are going to be different from each other, but especially Mr. Shearer's. Andrew, what musical did you want to talk about?
Well, you know, I thought people might expect me to bring in Rocky or Phantom of Paradise or Cannibal Musical, something like that, you know. So I decided to pick The Wiz, the 1978 version, because it is a cult movie, because a lot of people really think it sucks, and they thought it sucked when it came out. It was a bomb. It was basically put an end to the the black film explosion of the 70s, and Michael Jackson was never in another movie again. I don't think Diana Ross was either. But when I was a kid, I loved it. Like, my grandparents took me to see Wizard of Oz, like in a re-release or something. I was okay, a little scary. Man, The Wiz just fascinated me. The way it looked, the music is great. I mean, it's all like, I mean, it's L.A. era Motown, not Detroit era Motown, but still, man, Quincy Jones. Dude, if Quincy Jones hadn't worked on The Wiz, do you realize he wouldn't have met Michael Jackson like that? And that's how the two of them start collaborate. That's why we got Off the Wall and Thriller. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Nice.
But also, the special effects in the locations of The Wiz, if you've ever seen it, there's no movie that looks like The Wiz, man. It's crazy because they just went in like a lot of busted up parts of as well. Let's see, Astoria, Queens. There's Coney Island is there. Some of the leftovers from the World's Fair are there. World Trade Center is Emerald City. It's wild. They got Albert Whitlock, right? The guy that did matte paintings for The Thing. He did some work on that visual effects. Stan Winston, all the makeups.
Yeah.
I just was fascinated by and a little scared of it, which I think was a big criticism of it at the time. People were like, adults thought it was stupid and kids were afraid of it. And, you know, I mean, with good reason. The Wheelers are scary. A lot of those things. You know, Stan Winston, he's made a lot of the scariest monsters ever. So, you know, but mostly, I love the music in it, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I could put it on right now and watch the whole thing. And it's long. It's over 2 hours long. So, I don't know what you think about it. You're like, hey, Richard Pryor is the wizard? Diana Ross as Dorothy, Michael Jackson as Scarecrow, Nipsey Russell, you're like, hold up, wait, what? Sidney Lumet's the director?
Yeah, I love The Wiz, dude. Love it.
No, it's an interesting take on Wizard of Oz, and I remember seeing it when I was young, and it creeped me out, actually. It was scary.
Yeah, right?
There's some scary moments in it, but there are also some great musical numbers, including Get On Down the Road.
That's such a good song.
It is a great song, and it's a great pick because and it's funny that they did that live version recently, and I didn't watch that because for me, you know, it's always going to be the Michael Jackson version that I enjoy more than that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, you know, and plus all the cast of the Wizard of Oz is dead, you know, so it wasn't like at the time I think the Scarecrow from the original Wizard of Oz had bad stuff to say about the Wiz. He was like, "Oh, it's going to fail because it's full of black people." Actually, he didn't say that. He criticized how expensive it was. But wouldn't that be funny if like the old Scarecrow was racist?
Well, I want to hear him do it in that like that weird. Oh God, I can't remember who played the Scarecrow now, but he had kind of like that Ed Wynn-like voice, you know. Mm-hmm. If you remember, like, oh.
Was that Ray Bolger? I think was his name.
Ray Bolger. Yeah. Ray Bolger. Yeah.
Ray Bolger.
Just...
Ray Bolger.
Too many darkies in this movie.
But, right. It's like, dude, what do you have to say about it, man? Like, cut him. Cut his mic.
He's I have old. To go to my rally, clan rally now.
Oh, that would be funny. We'll just take a second here. Scott, with your moving around, you'll need to reduce the moving a little bit. We can hear you shuffling.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You know what I was actually doing? I was actually checking my movies and actually seeing if I had The Wiz here because Andrew was like getting me into...
He was easing on down the road.
I was easing on down the road into my video collection. I'm sorry.
About The Wiz and he started to dance.
He started
to dance. He's got a pee-pee.
Get his
I'm gonna find an empty Gatorade bottle because I'm out of my...
Don, The Wiz, have you seen it?
I remember seeing it. I remember seeing it when I was a kid, and it left an impression. The only thing I really remember about it was the number Get On Down the Road. Mm-hmm. And like you, I remember being really creeped out by it. Mm-hmm. But that's about all I've got.
I want to know what's these things in it that creeped you guys out. I mean, like, what parts?
Oh, man.
It was just the Wizard of Oz story always creeped me out because it had such darkness to it. And I think it just was just so far outside of what I was used to at an impressionable time in my life. Nothing more than that.
I mean, I think the environments, for one, are what stood out for me as kind of, you know, like you said, Andrew, I mean, they didn't pick some... Most of it was location shot, wasn't it? There wasn't much shot on
It was Astoria Studios, but, like, they... I think the... Some of the interiors or the exteriors were fake just because it wasn't like possible to shoot those in New York without having people be in the shot. You know what I mean? Just
right.
Like the public library where the Cowardly Lion comes out. The subway stuff. I mean, there's just so many cool. They didn't want to. I'm not supposed to be talking. You're supposed to be going down the line. What am I doing?
No, it's okay. You enjoy the movie. Glenn, how about you and The Wiz?
Man, the first time I watched The Wiz, I was in a super pissy mood because it was when my parents were having a fancy dinner party with fondue with all their friends, and we weren't allowed to leave our room, and we were watching it on this tiny little freaking, like, I don't know, quarter-inch black and white TV set. and I was pissy, and then my sister wouldn't let me sit on the bed, so I had to sit on the freaking floor in her bedroom on a hardwood floor, and I was just... And for a long time, that stuck with me. I just would not watch this movie because I associated it with this awful night of my childhood where I was denied, you know, cheese and meats dipped in boiling oil. But when I did watch it, yeah, it's I love it. It's a fun one. I haven't seen it a lot. I've only seen it probably two or three times since that inaugural outing. But it's nice to see something that is familiar yet so different as well.
Yeah, it's great to see a different take on that story, especially after, you know, you had that story around for so long, and then someone came along and actually was brave enough to do a variation on it and do it well.
And I can't imagine if they just tried to make that right now, what the Twitter trolls would be so up in arms over it. But it wouldn't be because of racist reasons. It'd be because you can't remake a classic.
Yeah.
At a dinner party, you should have done a Linda Blair and go downstairs in the middle of it and just pee on the floor.
We're all watching the Wiz up there.
Here's my Wiz.
That's right. I get it.
Wow. The Wiz. Sorry. But yeah, The Wiz is an excellent choice. Great soundtrack. Very well performed as well. Scott, anything else to add with The Wiz and your feelings on it?
I can't, because I have never seen it all the way through.
Really?
I know. I've always been kind of curious about it, and I always saw bits and pieces of it on TV when I was a kid, like on the movie channel when we first got it. When we first got the movie channel, it was in the very early 80s, so like one of the 12 movies that they had the rights to from that were from the previous 10 years was The Wiz. And so, you know, you'd turn it on like, oh, Richard Pryor! Wait, I'm not usually allowed to watch his movies. This is G? Okay. because that movies weren't, it was a while before Superman 3. And, so I saw that, and I remember seeing, like, the subway scene and stuff like that. But I don't think I've ever seen the movie all the way through. It's why I was just rummaging through my collection to see if I had collected it and just stashed it somewhere or something like that, and I haven't. So I think I'm going to probably be renting it on TV tonight or something.
Well, yeah, make sure you get the live one. I have not seen the live one, though I have heard.
Oh, no, I want Sidney Lumet, man, because even though I know that this movie kind of put him in the doghouse for a couple years until, I think, The Verdict or whatever, he's a great filmmaker, you know, so I'm like, I always kind of look at the credits for The Wiz and thinking, like, why didn't I watch this yet? It's one of those movies where you wonder why you haven't never gotten around to it, but I just haven't. So
wait, I'm gonna play internet now. Scott has not watched The Wiz. Must mean he's a racist. There you go.
No, that's clearly. Clearly, no, you got me.
We
so
know.
Why do you hate black people, Scott?
Come on, man. No, don't. Look, it's bad enough that I'm in Florida. It's guilt by association, so.
we're just giving you a hard time there, Scott. We know for a fact that is not you.
Oh, thank you for saying that. So, like, no one can do, like, a little edit of this one. Scott hates black people.
Just, but, you know, that is the
plays
internet.
On a loop on YouTube, on someone's YouTube channel or something.
Just cut in the part where he, what well,
especially
he
now that I have part. Audio of you saying, Scott hates black people, so you're like Bob Dole about your hatred.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then editing the part with the scarecrow saying the claim. We good to go, Jack.
Oh, but, no.
The Wiz is a fantastic choice. And I just thought I'd let you guys know our friend Tiger Dude is in the chat room tonight. He says hello.
Hey, Tony.
So,
Merry Christmas,
Tony. And he said he did fucking know that Scott was a racist. So,
come on, man! No!
That's what he gets for not watching The Wiz. No, we're on official record. Scott is not a racist. Scott has The Wiz. He's got a million and one movies to watch. But we're kidding, Scott. We love
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I know. We know. We all know that this is. Yeah. Okay.
We. Scott's like, I wasn't before, but now.
No.
Screw you guys. I'm not a racist, but I hate you guys.
But, I'm spoilist. Yeah. Spoiler-roomist.
You're spoilist. But The Wiz, yeah, it's a great, unusual telling. I like that it's different. It's someone who took a chance with it. And definitely, Andrew said, it. Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson got together, and then we got Thriller.
There's so many musicals that were kind of like, a lot of them kind of fell into kind of a disco vibe, but there were a lot of mid-70s, early 80s musicals that were really ambitious, and they did kind of tank, but they developed cult followings and stuff. You know, you got Skate Town USA, you've got Xanadu, which was another big musical that tanked from that era, which I love. You know, it shows you that people were still trying to, even when people thought it was old hat, people were still trying to reinvent it, and then people wouldn't go for it, but they kept trying, you know, to do new things with the format.
Yeah, Andrew mentioned The Apple was another one starring.
Oh, The Apple! Good God, that movie! Wow.
Starring one Catherine Mary Stewart, who you can catch her interview here right here in the spoiler room, so check it out.
You said the name.
I said the name.
You I'm said waiting the for name.
My, I'm waiting for my wife to come down now. great. I'm glad you picked that, Andrew, because it is definitely a different musical than the others that we're going to be talking about tonight. To be sure, and it is one that I think deserves more recognition. And I was glad that they did a live version because it was like, hey, someone's kind of acknowledging it, you know, the significance of it as well as, you know, that it was actually a ambitious and decent musical if you sit down and actually watch the whole thing. So thanks for bringing that tonight, Andrew. And Scott, we're going to go right to you next because we're going to go to the opposite spectrum. And we're going to go to a musical that
It's not racist, no.
But it's a musical. Well, Scott, why don't you tell us what musical that you brought?
It is a bit old-fashioned, though, yeah. My favorite musical of all time is Singin' in the Rain. Mm-hmm. It's perfect. There's nothing wrong with it. But I think someone actually already spoke about it on one of these spoiler room shows, so I'm going to talk about my second favorite for a bit, and that's a movie called The Bandwagon. Vincent Minnelli, 1953, movie stars Fred Astaire and Sid Charisse. Now, the movie starts out with Fred Astaire's plays basically a character who's very much modeled on himself, and as the movie starts out, he's such a has-been that his iconic top hat, cane, and gloves are being auctioned off, and they can't even get 50 cents for them. So he's considered a has-been, he's done, he's old hat, and he's considering just retiring. But he gets into New York after spending, you know, years over in Hollywood making movies, and his old friends, who are playwrights, who were actually modeled after the screenwriters Betty Comden and Adolf Green. I don't know. My handwriting sucks, but but they were based on the actual screenwriters. They come up with this great idea. We have a perfect, you know, lighthearted musical for you, and we're going to get the best director in town to stage your comeback musical. And he's all into it. He's like, great. And the problem is that, yes, this guy's a huge – they get this guy, and he's really into the project, but he doesn't see it as a lighthearted musical. He tries to change it into this very dark, modern retelling of Faust, which is completely not what they want to do. They just kind of start saying, no, want to write Faust, you know, but they make him do it. And also, they tried to, for additional star power, they tried to match with Fred Astaire a much younger star, a ballet star, who is played by Sid Charisse in her first leading role. She had been in lots and lots and lots of musicals before, lots of supporting roles. This is her first leading role. And oh gosh, wouldn't you know it, the two don't get along at first, you know, because, you know, he's old fashioned and she and he thinks she's a prima donna and she thinks he's over the hill and they think they're rude and, oh, but then they have this carriage ride in the park and they have to find out, well, can we dance together for the show? And they have this wonderful dance together. They find out, yes, they can dance together and they fall in love. And the thing takes this great, the film takes this great turn as they realize is that the Faust thing gets staged halfway through the movie. And of course it doesn't work out. It's never going to work out. It's disaster. It's chaos. But everybody reunites. It would be so easy to make the pretentious director this villainous character. They don't do that. He actually cops to how misguided he was, and they decide to stage this review and turn it all into a review, which is what it was supposed to be in the first place. And they all get together. There's these wonderful, wonderful musical numbers. There's wonderful dancing. The film on top of it is funny. It's really funny. It's got great characters, great acting, brilliant directing by Vincent Minnelli. And even if you're not familiar with the movie itself, you are certainly familiar with some of the songs from the movie, including That's Entertainment. That comes from this movie. And it's just this, the Bandwagon is just a complete delight for like 2 hours. I mean, there's not a missed beat in the whole thing. I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful movie.
Yeah, I actually watched it for the first time when you said that you were going to watch. I had seen bits and pieces, but I never actually – it was one of those, again, kind of like with what you were with The Wiz, Scott, is that you catch bits and pieces or dance routines and such, which, you know, I'd always catch, but never the whole movie. And I was watching it, and I'm like, yeah, it does follow that kind of that musical within a musical formula, but – it really did feel like Fred Astaire was kind of making trying to make a bit of a statement to his critics that he had maybe been over the hill, because he was older. I mean, you could tell he is. I mean, he could still dance. Don't get me wrong; he could dance better than anybody there. But at the same time, you could tell that he was a bit older. He wasn't quite as spry, and that number you mentioned in the park with Sid Charisse is amazing. It is a beautiful thing, and especially the way her dress is. Yes, I'm talking about her dress.
Oh, no, it's fantastic.
The way they cut her dress and everything, I mean, the way those two move in that park scene is amazing.
The choreography was all done by Michael Kidd, who is like one of the greatest choreographers of all time. Basically.
It wasn't actually done by Astaire? Because
Astaire, of course, did some of the stuff, but a lot of the elaborate dance sequences were choreographed by Michael Kidd in the movie.
Sure. Okay. That surprised me.
They all work together, I'm sure. But yeah, he was put in charge of it. Just like the screenwriters, there were the same screenwriters as that were in Singing in the Rain, and they actually based a lot of the movie on real people. Like, they based the playwright characters on themselves, and things that happened were things that happened to them. The pretentious director was based on Jose Ferrer.
Oh, okay.
Because Jose Ferrer always had like 3 or 4 different shows running simultaneously on Broadway at that time. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bit in the movie where originally when Fred Astaire found out he was going to be paired with Sid Charisse, who he was familiar with, you know, from seeing her dancing, but even though she was in the movie, he was terrified of dancing with her because she was this great ballerina, and he was so old. And he was concerned, like, well, wait a minute, look how tall she is. I'm going to look like a shrimp next to her. What am I going to do? And so what they do, they actually put in a little bit in the movie when they meet, and she's on a staircase, and he's trying to, like, he's actually adjusting his placement on the stairs to see, okay, where can I stand next to this woman and that I'm going to be, you know, be able to look her in the eye. And they actually incorporated all these little pathologies, all these little stories into the movie. It's adorable.
Don, you're laughing. What's up?
I'm laughing at Andrew.
Oh.
What did I do?
A staircase.
A staircase. Oh, Andrew, have you seen The Bandwagon with the staircase?
I have to be honest. I just really don't like white people, so I didn't see it. But Smooth Criminal, the Michael Jackson video, really big homage to Fred Astaire. Actually, he did Fred Astaire homages in a lot of his stuff, but this movie specifically, if you're familiar with Smooth Criminal, the way that he dresses in that video, it's like exactly from The Bandwagon.
I never saw the video, but I was listening. There's a commentary track on the DVD, so I watched it. Like, I rewatched the movie, and then I watched it with the commentary, and Liza Minnelli is on the commentary track, and she's talking about how much Michael Jackson loved the movie. It was like one of his favorite movies.
I can't tell you what stuff is from it in a couple. He did it more than one tribute, but Smooth Criminal is like the most well known Fred Astaire tribute. Like the most, he copied the clothes and everything.
Yeah, you could definitely feel that Fred Astaire style in that video. It's an awesome video too. I love his video for Smooth Criminal. Actually, all of Moonwalker, which is, you could consider a musical. Moonwalker is a great movie, actually. that one's fun to watch as well. But yeah, I could definitely see the influences from Fred Astaire in the Smooth Criminal video. How about you, Glenn? Have you seen Bandwagon?
Only parts.
Only parts as well?
Yeah, I've never seen the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend it to people. Seriously, it's just, it's one of those movies, even if you're not. And I think that actually is up Glenn's alley, knowing his tastes in like in some of the older musical classics and stuff. But I think that for people, even if you, it's one of those movies where even if you don't think it's up your alley, even if you don't think it's your thing, I think that most people who I've shown it to, just about everybody winds up loving it.
Yeah, and Don, how about you? Did you see Bandwagon?
I have seen parts of it actually. When I was in college, my grandparents lived about 8 blocks away from the university, so a lot of my time was spent at their house between classes, and I would watch with my grandparents, I would watch, this was what I would watch. I would watch the Donald O'Connor, the Frank Sinatra's, the Fred Astaire, Danny Kaye, Sid Charisse. No, why can't I think of
Gene
her
Kelly?
Name? Well, I was actually going to go with the ladies, but yeah, Gene
the
Kelly.
Ladies. Sure.
Ginger Rogers.
I used to watch, that was what I would watch when I was in college during my breaks, you know. So I've seen a lot of that whole period of film with the singing and dance numbers. I never really thought of them as musicals. That's just the way films were.
Sure, it wasn't exactly a specific genre. You just thought that's what the classic films were, which, I mean, a lot of them were back then. Were had song and dance numbers and such, because especially what, you know, you had a lot of them coming from stage and movies just hitting it huge, and that's why you had a lot of these stars. I mean, was it Singing in the Rain? It covers that exactly, of the moving from silent picture to talkies. Mm-hmm. So, you get a lot of these performers like that, and you just kind of associate it with it. Oh, a musical, that's an older classic film. But yeah, Bandwagon was great. I watched as well, and it is a great musical that you should watch if you enjoy musicals. I like some of the musical numbers are different than what you might expect too, especially for Fred Astaire. Had a little bit of a American in Paris feel in that they were kind of, you know, some of them were a little bit different beats, a little bit jazzy. In fact, Bandwagon ends with this noir. Oh, because I love noir. It ends with this noir type murder mystery story done in musical and dance form, and I was like, wow, this had feelings of the last, you know, number in American in Paris with the whole jazz and hipster, you know, type of feel to it, that kind of new age, I guess you would say, or, you know, I guess this was in, Bandwagon was 40s, was it, or was it?
It was 1953. I believe it was the year after Singin' in the Rain.
Yeah. So, you know, it kind of had that a little bit more. They're getting more in a little bit avant-garde-ish type of dance routines to where it's not your standard Fred Astaire classic ball gown dances. And yeah, I liked it quite a bit. And that's a good pick there, Scott, especially not just for the music routine of That's Entertainment, but it does kind of break a little bit of the formula as far as what they do with the characters. And there are some great numbers in there. And all the performers get a chance to shine in it too, which is nice. So speaking of non-traditional and a little bit modern feel to it, we're going to go and talk to Dawn about her pick tonight. Dawn, what musical did you bring to the room?
I had such a hard time deciding what I was going to bring. I was kind of scrolling through my music thinking, God, you know, there's so many good ones and so many that I listen to on a regular basis. The soundtracks for Hair, Rocky Horror, Evil Dead the Musical. Okay, yeah, so that's a stage, not a movie. I don't care. Purple Rain, definitely appropriate. I actually managed to watch Graffiti Bridge. I don't recommend it. and I decided to go with something that's completely different, Dr. Horrible Sing-Along Blog. I don't believe anything like that had ever been done before. Bringing it to as an internet release, something that was completely free, available to everybody who had access to internet.
Well, and why don't you tell our listeners, those few, shame on you, who wouldn't know about this being in the internet age. How could you not know about this? But why don't you tell them a little bit of the story of Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog?
Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog. Dr. Horrible is a doctor. He's got a PhD in horribleness. He is looking to get into the Evil League of Evil, which by doing something, some heinous crime, to impress its leader, Dark Horse, the Thoroughbred of Sin. Dr. Horrible, is played by Neil Patrick Harris, the incomparable Neil Patrick Harris. And his nemesis, Captain Hammer, played by Nathan Fillion.
And by Hammer, he means his penis.
Yeah. and by Hammer, he means his penis, who actually I really like Dr. Horrible's nickname for him, Cheesy on the Outside. So Dr. Horrible is in love with Penny through a comedy of errors and good luck on Hammer's part. Hammer actually gets the girl, big surprise, surprise. And just as Penny's starting to realize that Mr. Cheesy on the outside is also cheesy on the inside, there is the tragedy.
Yes.
And it's really hard for me not to just start singing it badly, but singing it nonetheless, because that's what you do when the music is what tells the story.
Brought to us by Mr. Joss Whedon himself, done during the writer's strike, because Joss actually gets together with buddies and they go and they do stuff. They come up with stuff.
Most of the people who worked on that just did it as favors. They weren't even paid. It was just all, hey, let's get together and have a good time.
Similar to the approach they took with the Much Ado About Nothing, which basically was shot at, I think it was at Joss's home, because apparently people he's worked with in the past, they come over for, you know, wine and food and recite Shakespeare, or wine and food and do musical numbers in this case. I remember when this came on, and it was so different in that, you know, it was not what you kind of expected. You're like, okay, sing along, and you're like, oh, it's Neil Patrick Harris, and he's doing a blog, okay, a vlog, and there's musical numbers. And it had an impressive production to it as well, if I remember correctly. And the musical numbers are written well, wouldn't you say, Dawn?
They are. They're written really well. My husband hates me when I play it because he always ends up singing along too, and he really, really hates that.
Well, because he doesn't exactly care for musicals.
So. No, he doesn't. He likes two musicals exactly, Purple Rain and Grease, and that's it.
Glenn, how about you with Dr. Horrible's Sing Along Blog? How do you you remember when you saw it?
I actually saw it a good year after it came out.
Mm-hmm.
It was always that, oh God, I gotta watch that, and then I forget about it. And I gotta watch it, and then I forget about it. And then I finally got it on DVD, and I watched it four times in a row. I like it a lot. It's so wonderfully done. And it's just so fun, and it's so me, and it's, you know, I love it. It's a great one.
Well,
find yourself associating with Dr. Horrible?
Yeah, absolutely.
They make the bad guy a sympathetic character, but that's because it's the way it's written and Neil Patrick Harris to boot. Mm-hmm. The way that character is played, you actually feel sorry for the bad guy in this. And it's independently produced as well, back when that was still kind of a new thing on the internet as far as getting funding or whatnot, if I remember correctly, this got no studio or anything. This was all just them putting it together. Joss, his brother, and people he knew. Andrew, how about you? Have you seen or watched Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog at all?
Yeah, I really like it. And I've seen it performed on stage, too. Here in Athens, I'm the weird movie maker guy. My friend Stephen Carroll is the weird theater producer guy, director guy. So he's done Rocky, Hedwig, Evil Dead. But he did a Dr. Horrible. And at the time, I had not even seen it. So I actually saw it on stage before and then went and watched it later. And I'm a fan. How could I not be? You know, it's pretty hardcore. It's almost above me as far as geek things go, you know. But because I wasn't like a Joss Whedon guy. You know what I mean? Not really. But this is probably my favorite thing that he's done.
Yeah, I would say that's one of my favorite things, too. And if you look at the Buffy musical episode, you can see exactly the roots of where this may have came from, which is still one of the best episodes because they turned a cheesy shtick episode of musicals and ended up making that a key episode to that season where basically all kinds of major plot points came out.
Still the best thing to happen in season 6, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. And I take it, Scott, you've seen Sing-Along Blog?
Yeah, I'm a Joss Whedon fan. This is, because of... And I got to be a Joss Whedon fan because I was really into Buffy. I just loved the idea that they said, wait, writer's strike, we can't make anything? Hell with that, we're making something. And they all got together, they found a workaround, they were all friends, so it's Neil Patrick Harris, Nathan Fillion, Felicia Day, who is amazing in her own right, she gets so much attention from stuff like The Guild and everything like that, and all the stuff she does on Geek and Sundry that sometimes people forget, oh wait, she's also a really decent actress. And I just thought that the film was just so brilliantly put together. It's short, it's like around an hour long or so. But it hits every little beat. I mean, the music is fantastic, the staging is fantastic, it's funny, it's got those unexpected turns. And Don, did you listen? Now, I think you may have mentioned this on, because you mentioned when you were watching this on Facebook, I know, but for, everybody else out there who isn't us. Did you listen to the commentary track on the DVD?
I did not listen to the commentary. I instead watched the featurette.
The thing about the commentary that is brilliant
is that
it's sung. It's actually a choreographed and sung commentary track with the cast and crew. it's like another musical. They actually pulled out a second musical without telling anybody. It's brilliant. I kind of just love And this is just, if there was ever going to be a movie that was going to, like, pull something like that, it would be something like this, because this movie was constantly, like, doing what you did not expect anybody, much less them, to do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I just thought it was a wonderfully put together film. Absolutely great.
Yeah. And I agree that the numbers were actually – they're not simple just musical numbers either. They are actually involved. You got counter melodies going on and all kinds of things with it. So, yeah, it's a great choice there, Dawn, with that. And definitely a non-traditional musical as far as how it was released.
I actually really hope that they do – somebody, anybody does more like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we really haven't gotten a whole lot since. I mean, you know, and I think what threw a lot of people was the fact that it was people who, especially at that time, were bigger, our bigger names and our known names. Here's Hollywood folks just doing something like this because they wanted to do something like this, you know. I mean, they didn't really, like you said, they were doing it because they're friends of Joss. And they're like, yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, this looks like fun. You know, and yeah, it would be cool to see more things like this. And I'm not sure if we will, because, you know, that's taking a chance, and not many production studios now take as many chances like that. So excellent choice on that, Dawn. Very entertaining, folks. Definitely check it out. And the commentary, which is just hilarious, is them singing it. And we'll go to Mr. BFD himself. We go back a little bit classic here. Glenn, why don't you tell us a little bit about your choice tonight?
My choice is the 1964 classic, My Fair Lady. The story of basically kind of a dickhead snob phonetics professor who makes basically a bet that he can make a kind of gutter-snipe cockney girl and make her presentable to high society. It stars the actual, in real life, snobby, dick-headed, misogynistic Rex Harrison as the professor, and one of my favorite actresses of all time, Audrey Hepburn, even though a lot of her singing was overdubbed by Marnie something. This is one of my favorite musicals. It's one of my favorite movies too. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, it's just one that I remember seeing it, because I saw it initially because I was probably 15 when I first saw it, because my mother had mentioned that my dad liked the movie. This was it's one of my dad's favorite. He likes this one and The Music Man.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So Robert Preston, sure.
So, yeah, I checked this one out based on that. And I remember kind of liking it when I watched it, because, I mean, I was a 15-year-old kid. You know, I thought more of my dick than anything else. but revisited back in college, and I've probably watched it a good 20 times since then. I have the vinyl and a CD of the soundtrack. So it's just one of my favorite films.
Yeah, it's a great movie, and it's Audrey Hepburn, who is 35, playing a 19-year-old.
Yeah,
that's kind of a recurring theme, because Diana Ross was certainly older than Dorothy was supposed to be in The Wiz.
Yes, well, there was so much controversy over this film too, because Rex Harrison had done the stage play with Julie Andrews,
mm-hmm.
Of course, people felt that Julie Andrews should have been cast along with Rex Harrison, but the studio didn't think she was a big enough name.
Wow.
As far as film goes.
Sure.
So they went with Audrey Hepburn instead. And it's just funny things with the casting, because originally the studio wanted Cary Grant for the lead instead of Harrison. They didn't want to go with either of the people from the stage play. And Cary Grant turned it down for two reasons. One, he felt that his original upbringing, as he said, his vocal ability was much more closely related to Eliza Doolittle than it was to the professor. And he also made a statement that they should cast Rex Harrison, and they'd be idiots if they didn't. And if they didn't, he wouldn't even watch the film.
Oh, wow.
So he was apparently a big person who pushed for Rex Harrison because the studio didn't want him because they felt he looked too old. Basing off his performance in the movie Cleopatra, where he plays an epileptic who's dying. I'm like, well, yeah, he looks sickly and old because he's supposed to be sickly and old.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a fascinating movie. It was one of the more expensive films made. It had like $17 million. The guy who made the sets, Gene Allen, I believe, production designer, was given no budget. He just made stuff.
Wow.
They never gave him a budget for it. And just so many of the other people that were thought to be in this. They wanted Peter O'Toole in the lead and just very interesting stuff. And there's the whole controversy is that many people felt that Audrey should have gotten a Best Actress nomination for it. But she didn't, and it's believed that it was because of the fact that there were some people who felt Julie Andrews should have had the role. There are other people who felt that she didn't do anything because her songs are overdubbed. But yeah, it's despite all that, I still love it. I still think it's a great movie.
Well, it's a really elaborate production, too.
Yes, and an interesting thing about this one is, unlike how they do most, especially longer, you know, feature-length films, this film, all of Audrey's scenes were shot in sequence.
Wow.
Of the script. Because by her insistence, because she wanted to basically grow into the character and grow as the character grew, because of the fact that Rex Harrison and a couple other people had done the stage play, she felt that she needed this this little bit extra to basically keep up with them.
Wow!
And the average shot, the length of each average shot in the movie is under 10 seconds.
Which was rare for back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's impressive for back then, especially for a movie that's almost, 3 hours and change, almost?
About two and a half.
Two hours, 50 minutes, or something?
No, 2 hours, 50 minutes, yeah.
I mean, it moves along, and it is a great story and performances. Yeah, Audrey Hepburn is fantastic as the street urchin project, if you will.
Yes.
I love her performance in here and her growth.
Yeah, and Harrison didn't want her in the role initially.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's supposed to be about a young guttersnipe who learns to fit into ballroom society, and he made a snide comment of the fact that Audrey's never set foot outside of a ballroom.
Ooh.
Because of her, she had a very well-to-do upbringing. But then later he says that when he was asked years later who his favorite leading lady was, he says, Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady. He also initially didn't like Julie Andrews in the stage production. Like I said, he's kind of a dick.
It's something that he was able to go back and,
a little bit.
If not admit that he was wrong, you can kind of add two and two together, because he does have a reputation even after this movie on productions like Cleopatra and Dr. Doolittle and everything else. He was a real pain in the ass.
Well, he had a huge ego.
Yeah.
The original title of the movie was, I think it was My Lady Liza,
mm-hmm.
or something like that, and he was dead against that because he didn't want – he was against the – name of a female lead being in the title of the film.
Oh, Jesus. Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, he's got, it's... And, I mean, also the fact that, I mean, when you look at, the play, I mean, it was George Bernard Shaw.
Yeah.
So, it's got there, and, I mean, the director, George, I always don't know if... I never know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but Cukor.
Mm-hmm.
Did Philadelphia Story. So, I mean, he's done A Star Is Born. He's done some big name stuff too. I mean, he worked on Gone with the Wind. He worked on The Wizard of Oz. The guy started in like 1929 or 1930 or something like that, and worked up until actively working up through the 60s, and still had some work in the 70s and up into the 80s. So, I mean, that's
impressive.
That's an impressive career.
And it is an impressive musical, and I love the costuming in that film as well. for it, especially some of Audrey's outfits. Andrew, My Fair Lady, you have any thoughts with it?
We saw it in school, man. We read Pygmalion by the one of the original anti-vaxxers, George Bernard Shaw. and then we watched after read Pygmalion, then we watched My Fair Lady, and I think it took a week to watch it all, but really liked it, and I'm digging listening to all that great trivia, man. I'm more into a lot of times movie trivia when it comes to like the classics more than I am like sitting and watching them and stuff, but I really liked it, and I think my friend who just had a baby and named her Eliza after this character.
Oh, nice.
Like 2 days ago.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
That is awesome. And yeah, I love the trivia and the stories that you get with these productions, especially because you're talking the old studio system, so these people kind of hung with the same crowd. So you get these stories that are interesting. And I'm really glad Glenn brought it. Don, your thoughts on My Fair Lady?
I don't have anything much to add. It's an incredible movie. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in a long time. I'm sitting here staring at my VHS copy of it. but I haven't seen it in a long time. I just remember it was an amazing movie.
Yeah, and Scott, how about you? Any quick thoughts there on My Fair Lady?
Oh, it's fantastic. You know, I think, you know how I was mentioning earlier, like how we kind of grew up and we may have been skewed a little bit because all the kids' movies were musicals? Mm-hmm. I think that might have been a reason why it took me about like 20, 25 years to come around to My Fair Lady in my life, because this is one of my mother's favorite movies.
Oh.
And my only experience with it when I was younger was that she wanted to watch it. Like, when it came on, I remember I was well aware of the movie's length because I had to be the one to tape it off. I think it was on the Disney Channel, actually, even though it's not a Disney movie. And I had to tape it for her, and I had to just figure out how to fit it on the tape for her. You know, like, what speed do I need to put this on? You know? And I remember doing all that, and I think I kind of got skewed, and then I went to school, and kind of when I was away a little bit towards the end, like around when I was like, I'd say like 20, 25 years old, I started watching a lot of these movies that my parents, like my mother especially, because my dad was not a movie guy, my mother loved, like I started watching them again, like My Fair Lady, Music Man, and saying like, wow, damn it, another thing she was right about. Because it's really an amazing film, you know, and it's got so many great numbers, so many great songs from all different things. Like, you know, you got all the great songs with Rex Harrison and you know, Audrey Hepburn and, you know, the woman who, Marnie Nixon, the person who dubbed her, and stuff like that. And you also got great acts like, you know, Get Me to the Church on Time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is there anybody on this planet that, you know, couldn't like sit through the whole thing and not get a little emotional during, you know, I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face? It has such a wonderful dramatic build, the whole movie. When she asserts her independence, not even the musical scene, but when she inserts her independence, you know, to say, like, wait a minute, you didn't build me. I'm my own person. I mean, it's an amazing film, and it's a classic, and I think it's going to continue to be a classic.
Yeah, I think after a long, some of those other films have gone the way of the dodo, people will still be talking about My Fair Lady. So a great movie to bring, Glenn. It's one of those really epic type of musicals that you get. And, you know, production all the way around, it is a very impressive film. And I love it as well. I enjoy the musical numbers in there especially. And Audrey Hepburn's just fantastic. She should have probably won that Oscar, at least got the Oscar nom for it, because she was fantastic in the film and probably should have got the gold statue. So we're down, I guess, to my choice. and I know we're going a little late, so we won't keep it too long here for you guys tonight. But for me, I went a little more modern. I do have a lot of musicals. Yes, I don't just watch horror. I do enjoy musicals quite a bit, actually. And I do love them, especially those classics they've mentioned tonight, Music Man. Everybody who brought a film here tonight, I've enjoyed all of those. But for me, I kind of went a little more modern because for me, it gave me a little faith in modern filmmaking and made me realize that, you know, you could still make a musical. And for me, it's Moulin Rouge. And I love Moulin Rouge. I'm a big visual guy, and Baz Luhrmann, the visual onslaught that Moulin Rouge gives you is amazing, and what's even more amazing is how much it references classic musicals before it, from the sets to the musical numbers, and it uses what I love it is how they integrated modern tunes to it. You basically get the story of this playwright who's gone to Paris to be with the Bohemian Revolution, if you will, and the whole artistic movement, and he ends up falling in love with the main courtesan slash singer at the Moulin Rouge, and she we get it basically a comedy of events going on to where they are going to put on a big, huge, epic production. And he's going to write it, and it's his way of staying close to her as she is promised, if you will, to the main investor of the play. And we see how things play out from there as the torn lovers, you see them on a tragic path. And it hits all the musical tropes in here, but I tell you, when I saw this in the theater, I was blown away. For one, the fact that someone used modern tunes in that musical type of format just surprised me. It just caught me off. And then the visuals are insane. The visual colors of the Moulin Rouge and the different colors of the villain. And I'm gushing about this film because I love it. I love all the musical numbers. I have all the songs. I love the story behind it on how they got Nicole Kidman for it, who didn't realize she could sing until she was in this film. And they got her to sing, and she sung, and it turned out she's fantastic. And Ewan McGregor singing in here, you know, there's a fantastic piece, and it's probably one of my all-time favorite covers, is the cover of Roxanne. It's done to a tango, and it's done during one of the darker moments, because this film does have dark moments. It's done during one of the darker moments of the film, and that whole thing, the way it's put together, and I think on the DVD and the Blu-ray, they have the version where it's just the performers dancing that routine. It just gets you. I could go on and on about this film. I really love it. It is one of my favorite films. You wouldn't think it if people know me and have heard me on this podcast, but it is. I can't. Every time I think about this movie, it smiles, and I just want to put it in and watch it again. I think for modern musicals go, it was fantastic, and I was disappointed. And I apologize if this sounds a little bitchy, but at the Oscars a couple years ago, they did a quote-unquote tribute to the modern musical. And that tribute consisted of three numbers. One of them was from the modern musical of Chicago, because Moulin Rouge kind of helped launch that modern musical, live-action musical movement for a while in the early 2000s, if I'm not mistaken. And they didn't have it in there. And why? They only had the three musical numbers from the guys who produced those three musical films, modern musicals, who happened to be producing the Oscars that year.
Is that the Weinsteins?
I believe it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Or the director. Anyway, the guy involved in putting on the Oscars that year was the one involved in the three musical numbers, three musicals that they used to pay tribute to the modern musical. And I'm like, no Moulin Rouge routine? Seriously?
From what I've heard, there's something political where there's a fair segment of Hollywood that does not like Baz Luhrmann.
Yep, I've heard that too.
Because that was the fact that he didn't get a nomination for the movie.
Mm-mm.
Well, also, if you remember, this is a rule that they recently had to, you know, wipe out because they just couldn't get away with it anymore, was it was a big deal because they said, oh my God, this is such a glorious musical and everything. And it got nominated for stuff, but I mean, there's lots of snubs. One of the biggest snubs is that it didn't get nominated for Best Song. And they mm-hmm. said, well, because they were all previous songs. I said, well, what about Come What May? It's like the quintessential, like, linking thing. It's the secret song that is about their love, you know? And they said that they wouldn't nominate that song because it was originally written for Romeo and Juliet, even though it didn't get used for that movie. And that was their reason for not nominating it that year, even though, you know, songs have won that had appeared in other movies, you know? And so, and recently they had to, you know, go and finally, like, just get rid of that ridiculous rule. But everybody kind of thought there was kind of more to it than that, that someone really had it out against this movie for some reason.
Yeah, that's the way it feels, too, which is sad because, I mean, visually, too, Baz Luhrmann is a big visual director, and it's just a unique sensory experience. I'm sorry if that sounds cheesy, but it really is if you sit down and watch it. Andrew, what about you? How do you feel about with Moulin Rouge? Do you like it?
Oh, yeah, man. Like, Romeo and Juliet was such a cool movie, dude. I mean, mm-hmm. so, like, following that up, we were like, stoked to see Moulin Rouge. And I just remember thinking, like, God, I wish this was in 3D. You know what I mean? How awesome would that be? It is everything. The visuals, the music, the camera, the costumes. I mean, if someone were to go, like, what's a musical, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Probably I'd play on Moulin Rouge, to be honest with you. It's just so brazen. It's an explosion of everything for your eyeballs and your ear holes. And I remember, did you like Great Gatsby?
I actually haven't seen it yet.
Okay. That was the one that he made it in 3D. And mm-hmm. the whole time we're watching Gatsby, which in 3D was pretty cool. We're just like, fuck it, no, I'm cool with a Moulin Rouge. I'd have been if he'd done this. It was shot in 3D, you know. Mm-hmm. But that Lady Marmalade, right?
Yep.
That song, huge. That video was on all the time. And my friends that are in burlesque are like, you know, the one thing they had to change in the movie was that the Moulin Rouge dancers did not wear underwear. that was a little thing they had to make sure that they, in order to get their not get an X rating or whatever.
Yeah.
That's the only historic inaccuracy that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that he tried to replicate a lot of stuff historically, but also, you know, musical sets as well. He integrated everything. I mean, I loved in the Lady Marmalade song. With the singers that they got together for that, is that's just a phenomenal. I mean, the original is a phenomenal song, and then you get those ladies together singing it. I loved that version of it quite a bit. Glenn, how about you with Moulin Rouge?
I love Moulin Rouge. Mm-hmm. I have several of the songs are almost always on my playlist on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy the heck out of it. I remember seeing it at the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee three times.
Wow.
And a friend of mine dragged me to it because he would watch anything with Nicole Kidman. So that's why. That's the only reason he wasn't even that much of a musical fan, but he adored Nicole Kidman. It's not that he thought that she was, like, gorgeous or anything like that. Well, kind of. He admired her shoulders.
Oh, okay.
The curve of her shoulders. He would talk, when he got him drunk, for length about the curve of Nicole Kidman's shoulders. So he saw it and then immediately was going to take me to it. And I'm like, I don't. I mean, yeah, I have interest in it, but, you know, I don't want to spend $9 on a movie tonight. And he's like, I'll pay for you. I'm like, okay, I will go see this. And then I saw it two more times after that where I'm like, yeah, I'll pay money to see this. I liked it.
Yeah, and Don, how about you with Moulin Rouge?
Okay, I haven't seen it.
Oh, you've
been trying. Ooh. No, you have been trying to get me to watch it for years.
Yes, I have.
Yes, you have. I finally bought it. It is in the pile next to my TV to be watched.
Oh, good, good. And if you ever want to need someone to watch it with you, or if you want to bring it over and want to watch here, I twist my arm. More than happy.
I think I've already mentioned this story on the show before. I'm not positive, so I'll make it very quick. But this is my favorite movie of that year, which I believe was the year, I think it was 2000. It was 2001. Yeah, it was 2001 when this movie came out. Because I was living at the, because I remember exactly where I was living because I wasn't living there very long. Because I loved this movie and it had just come out, and about a few weeks after it came out, I was living in Minneapolis or St. Paul, and I remember that was when I had the double whammy that kind of derailed my life for a little bit, which was that I got laid off from my job, which was actually a decent job, you know, and then within 2 weeks, as I'm trying to like scramble straight and try to get another job and everything like that in the, you know, television or whatever, within 2 weeks, these people came into our apartment and said, "We have just bought this apartment building. Everybody, no one is having their lease renewed. You all need to be out of here in a week."
Wow.
So I was like, okay. Suddenly I went from like, you know, being in, you know, having a decent job in St. Paul, living on my own, to having to like go home to my folks' house. You know, and it's like, oh. Well, what do you do? Well, what I don't know what you do when you get the wind taken out of your sails. I go to the movies.
Sure.
And I just said, sounds good. And I'm like putting my keys in my pocket and I'm like stepping out the door and walked to the Grandview Theater again and watched it like two more times, basically,
wow.
To escape in the world of Moulin Rouge. And I felt better afterwards because it's one of those movies that really can transport you like that.
It does. It sucks you in. It's a great, you know.
It's brilliant. It's beautiful.
It is a beautiful film. And especially if you're a fan of musicals, you can catch the references in there. But even if you aren't, just the fact of how well they melded the, you know, used modern tunes for a musical like that really was fantastic, and it really set the way, or set the path, if you will, for modern musicals to come after that. I honestly feel that, you know, it showed that what you could do, and you could still do it, and there were still performers out there willing to do it. So that is my pick, is a more modern one. Like I said, I do love the classics. Everybody had great picks here tonight. We are getting a little late, so we'll wrap it up here. I appreciate all these fine folks joining me here for talking about musicals, a genre that I think gets picked on way too much, and you should have probably at least a little more respect for, because the people involved and what is involved for those performers to actually do those numbers and sing and act, it takes a lot of talent and a lot of work. And I think a little more respect should be paid to those than it is paid sometimes. So we'll go down real quick here. And why don't you find folks, tell us where we can find you at. Don?
You can find me at intheaudience.net.
Fantastic. Great blog there. She's got some great reviews there. Check it out. And Glenn?
Find me on YouTube, Guy in the Bunker Productions, or just follow me on Twitter at Guy in a Bunker.
There you go. I got some great Twitters going on from the BFD, and of course those reviews on YouTube are a must-watch, especially those who like a different kind of cinema. He covers a wide gambit of films there. And Mr. Gonzarickvic, you have yourself something new that you definitely should tell people about here.
Oh, yeah, man. I just got a whole pack of socks. They're just, my old ones had so much holes in it, man. I'm like, God, how did this happen?
I also have a new movie out. It's called Late Night Cable. You can, if you're into physical media with lots of extras, including some very close-up shots of naked butts of Countess Samula of Erotic Couch fame. All of you that have been waiting for that, she's been pressuring me for years to release this short we made that has a lot of her butt in it. So now you have that. www.gonzorific.com to get that DVD. And if you'd just like to watch it, you can get it on Amazon On Demand. And, you know, enjoy, dude. There's no singing and dancing, but someone does hump every single item in their living room. So
that, I believe,
to music.
I believe that was a cut scene from Sound of Music. So
the crotch is alive with the Sound of Music.
Yes, that's true. The crotch is alive with the Sound of Music. Julie Andrews. I mean, she didn't want that on. You know, she didn't want that.
She was very uncomfortable in the thong made of a Swiffer. Also,
yeah. And Scott, where can we find you at?
Sorry, I'm just loving the thong made of a Swiffer thing. That's just great. That's got me cracking up. Okay. Well, you can normally catch me at moviocrity.com. That's where I put a lot of the shows that I'm on and anything else I do, like videos or writing or anything. A lot of that's on hold right now because I'm having really bad technical difficulties, which is why I might sound a little different this time because I'm on my phone. You know, yeah, usually moviocrity.com will do it. You can check out the show Moviocrity at vimeo.com/channel/moviocrity. And, yeah, why don't you do that?
Awesome, and thank you, Andrew. Now, Chim Chimmery has a whole new meaning to me thanks to the Swiffer thong. You can find my stuff at specialmarkproductions.com, where you can find our previous episodes. We are cruising right along. You can check out my YouTube channel, YouTube/specialmark. I am so close to 1,000 subscribers. Thank you to all our new subscribers, and thank you as well to all those who have stuck with me for almost 10 years. 10 years in July, can you believe it, on YouTube's. So I'm planning some stuff there, but we're only 51 people away from hitting the big 1K subs. So tell your friends, have them subscribe. You'll get to see these live, raw recordings of the Spoiler Room, as well as my reviews and some other things I occasionally do as well. I want to appreciate all these fine crew members for joining us tonight to talk about musicals. And remember, in the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.
The movies.
The movies.